I told them when they put this guy here, it's nothing but trouble. He's a showboat. If you keep talking, I'll leave and you can have it out with the rest of these people. Just a loudmouth.
The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Sorry, Mr. President, you cannot silence me. Coming to you from the Carter Subaru Studio. Welcome to our top stories this hour. Welcome to The Big Lead. Before I get to all the local stuff that we have, now refresh my memory, Nicole. You did watch the multi-part Jeffrey Epstein documentary on Netflix, right?
Oh, yes, definitely. I was pretty engaged by it.
I was. It was one of the most depressing things I've ever watched in my life because every young woman's story was identical. How when they were little girls, Epstein and his girlfriend pimp, Ghislaine Maxwell, would just target kids who were, you know, in horrible financial situations, who were having self-esteem issues, who were runaways, and bring them in to service this monster of a human being. And finally, over the weekend, Ghislaine Maxwell, you know, Jeffrey Epstein, died in prison, officially ruled a suicide. Many of us do not believe it was a suicide because he's got the goods on Prince Andrew, who hung out with him and was in photos with at least one of these underage girls. Bill Gates was on his plane at least three times. Bill Clinton, 27 times. Donald Trump was photographed with him. I don't know how many times they were together, but very powerful people were in the presence of Jeffrey Epstein. And so he's dead, but Ghislaine Maxwell, she was hiding out in New Hampshire, and nobody can figure out why, because she could have been anywhere in the world. She's the heiress of a billionaire media mogul in Great Britain. She has French citizenship, which I believe would have protected her from extradition if she was in France. But she went to this million-dollar, 186-acre estate in New Hampshire. Did you see the pictures of the estate, by the way?
Yes, I did.
I tell you what, $1 million buys you a lot more in New Hampshire than it does in Seattle.
It definitely does.
I mean, it's like this nice Tudor mansion on 186 acres, and it looks beautiful. You can get a three-bedroom, two-bath fixer-upper for $1 million in Seattle right now. But she was hiding out there, and then they swooped her up, the FBI did, early, I think it was Saturday morning, and now she's sitting in jail. So now the question is because she's on suicide watch, like her dead monster boyfriend was, supposedly. So is she going to try to off herself in jail? Is she going to just sing like a canary and talk about, you know, Clinton and Prince Andrew and some of these other guys who were, you know, frequent guests and try to get a reduction in her sentence? The problem is, She's at the top of the crime chain, so you can't squeal on somebody who did something far lesser than you and get off for that. You can squeal on somebody way above you in some crime, and maybe you can get off. But she's not going to get off, and I hope she spends the rest of her life in prison, because what an absolute monster she has turned out to be as well. So that was one of the big pieces of news over the weekend. Okay, let's see what else I got before I get to all the local stuff. Got a bunch of cancel culture stuff. Oh, including, did you guys hear about this Boeing executive? He's the executive of communications, vice president of communications for Boeing. And when he was a Navy fighter pilot in 1987, he wrote an article for a naval magazine. He was a lieutenant in the Navy at the time. Neil Golightly is his name. And in the article that he wrote 33 years ago, he said, and the big debate in the late 80s was, should we have women in combat? And this Navy fighter pilot thought we should not at the time. And he wrote, at issue is not whether women can fire M60s, dogfight MiGs, or drive tanks. Introducing women into combat would destroy the exclusively male intangibles of war, of war fighting, and the feminine images of what men fight for: peace, home, family. Now, is that outrageous a thing to say? Because I have long believed that, just based on, you know, my marriage, our family, most families that I've observed, men and women are very different. And I think that, you know, our DNA makes us different. And I'm not just talking biologically, but I'm talking about thousands and thousands of years ago when men were the hunters and gatherers and women were the nesters. And women are the nurturers in our society. And I think that it's very healthy for kids to have the attributes that are male and the attributes that are female as guiding influences in their lives. Anyway, so this guy writes this in 1987. He now has renounced what he wrote. He says that it was embarrassingly wrong and offensive. But it was 33 years ago. Well, one person complained and said, your vice president of communications in 2020 was sexist once in 1987. He resigned because of a 33-year-old article that he wrote as a 20-something Navy fighter pilot. So there's no statute of limitations at all in the cancel culture. Unless you're liberal. If you're Jimmy Kimmel, there's a statute of limitations. If you're the governor of Virginia, what's his name? Northam? Blackface, Klan Hood, Northam? But he's a Democrat. So there's a statute of limitations. But man, you write an article 33 years ago and you're not far left, they will come and get you. And they have now at Boeing. Also in the cancel culture, the Washington Redskins and the Cleveland Indians have both said that they're going to rethink their team nickname. And look, I've always thought that Redskins was a problematic name. And it, even by my standards, and I'm not the most politically correct person in the world, but Redskins just has always seemed like it's completely out of touch. So I understand that. Indians, not so much. My question there is, if Indians has to go, what about the Minnesota Vikings? What about the Notre Dame Fighting Irish? What about the high school where I coach, the Shorecrest Scots, the Highlanders? Why are all those okay, but Indians has to go? And so, you know, Indians, Braves, ironically, the Washington Post has done a couple of polls of Native Americans the last 8 years, asking them if they find the Redskins team name to be offensive. And roughly 90% of Native Americans do not take offense at the name Redskins. But again, for those who are genuinely offended by it, I understand that one. I understand Redskins. I did see one idea over the weekend. Somebody said, why don't you just remove, because right now they have, you know, the Native American with a headdress on the side of their helmets. And somebody said, just like, you know, King County used to be named after a vice president of the United States, and 20 years ago, they said, okay, no, we're now Martin Luther King County. So they kept the name King County. Redskins could do the same thing. Just on the side of the helmet, have a red skin potato as your new mascot. And you could have a dancing potato on the sidelines, and then you could keep the name. Just a thought. I'm available for free as a consultant to anybody who asks in any industry, because I have every answer to every societal ill. And with that as mere prelude, let's get right to the big lead.
The big lead, top story.
The disastrous summer of love continues in the Pacific Northwest as, you know, Jenny Durkin so flippantly, so thoughtlessly, as lives were being turned upside down, she declared this to be the summer of love. And then the Washington State Patrol and Jay Inslee decided to shut down I-5 right smack dab in the middle of downtown Seattle for 19 consecutive days so a bunch of ne'er-do-wells could shut down the freeway. They aren't protesters. They claim they are, but they weren't hoping to accomplish. There was nothing they were going to accomplish at 1:30 a.m. Saturday that they hadn't already accomplished in the 18 previous nights of shutdown. They were just like petulant children who, oh, nobody's going to stop us. We're just going to keep doing it. And so they did. And so it ended, as we predicted 2.5 weeks ago, it ended in absolute tragedy. As a 27-year-old guy driving at a very high rate of speed blasted around one of the vehicles that had been positioned across the freeway and hit two young women. 24-year-old Summer Taylor died from her injuries, and 32-year-old Diaz Love is still in serious condition. And I mentioned a couple of hours ago, because when I heard the names Sunday morning, it was chilling that Jenny Durkin had been talking about the summer of love, and the two women who were hit are named Summer and Love. That's a one in a billion right there. That doesn't seem like just some cosmic turn in the universe. I know it is. But how bizarre is that? Summer Taylor and Diaz Love were the ones who were hit. And this absolutely should not have happened. Just as we knew CHOP was going to end in disaster and two teenage kids were murdered, four others shot, and we said that the I-5 shutdowns were going to end in disaster. And now you got one woman dead, another one fighting for her life. What was Jay Inslee thinking? Allowing this. I mean, this is a disruption of interstate commerce. It's a violation of so many laws. Jay Inslee, weeks ago, was railing about business owners who, well, we can't have them pick and choose which laws to follow. Can't have Barber Bob in Snohomish open up when everybody else is shut down. We can't have people just deciding that they're going to follow some laws and ignore others. And yet Jay Inslee and the Washington State Patrol decided they were going to ignore, there have to be at least a dozen violations, walking on and shutting down I-5. And we're talking about, you know, federal violations. And they allowed it. They enabled it. And we asked the Washington State Patrol, who I've always had a great rapport with, to come on and explain the decision-making when so many of us knew this was going to end in absolute disaster. And they will not. They said, we'll come on and we'll talk about the accident Saturday morning, but we can't talk about the decisions that led up to 19 straight days of shutdown. And it's because, like Jenny Durkin, Jay Inslee and the Washington State Patrol, they are very active participants in this young woman being killed. Now, I mean, I think the protesters put themselves in a very dangerous situation. And of course, I think the lion's share of culpability is assigned to the driver of the car, a 27-year-old black man who mowed down two white women, another aspect of the story that was largely buried all weekend, even though the Washington State Patrol on the 4th, the day of the accident, they wrote up a report, they listed his race, and everybody in the media said, oh, we don't know because we can't trust social media. It was on the Washington State Patrol booking form. But it didn't fit the narrative. Do you think this story is on any national news today? No. Now, if it'd been a white supremacist that mowed down two marchers of the black women's rights movement, be the lead story all across the country. But because the assailant was black, the story gets buried nationally, but it also gets buried locally. I'm telling you, it would have gotten 1,000 times more coverage if the driver of the car had not been black. And when we start making news judgments based on very arbitrary things like the importance of demographics within a news story, when race has been the central issue of all of the violence and mayhem and deaths that have enveloped our region, and yet it was a complete ignored issue, completely ignored issue over the weekend. It's amazing. It's amazing to watch how this all plays out, this little kabuki theater that we have going here. Okay, that is your big lead for today.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
Check the news for you, and then we'll talk more about some of the violence going on all around America. We've got a really solid batch of awesome audio as well. All of that is straight ahead as the Dory Monson Show rolls. I'm sorry. That was a well-done newscast by Aaron Grunillo, but the content of the people quoted in the newscast, nothing in the world makes sense to me anymore.
Hey, Dory.
Nothing makes sense. Yeah.
That's Chris Martin.
Yes. Oh, that's Chris
Martin. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay, Chris. I love Chris. And like I said, it was a well-constructed newscast. But the content of the people in the news, it makes no sense to me. So he had sound bites from the Washington State Patrol saying that they're not going to allow these protests on the freeway because the freeway is never a place for a pedestrian, right? So why did they allow pedestrians to shut down the freeway for 19 straight days if they know that that's a dangerous situation? Why did they allow it? Why did they put political correctness? Oh, we can't squelch a protest. Why did they put political correctness above human life? And Jay Inslee's at the top of that food chain. You know, the governor oversees the state patrol. And Jay Inslee, along with the state patrol, decided to allow hundreds of people to walk on the freeway for 19 consecutive days. And now today the state patrol says, oh, the freeway's never a safe place for pedestrians and we're not going to allow it anymore. But we had to wait for a death. I think most of us, as I talked about 2.5 weeks ago, would not have allowed it in the first place. And we would not have allowed the inmates to run the asylum around here. But now they say, oh, now it's too dangerous because somebody died this weekend. It makes me crazy that we have, you know, Jenny Durkin just decided we'll wait until two teenagers are shot dead before I go into CHOP. And even that might not have done it. She went in because protesters went to her mansion. And that bothered her. That more than anything. By the way, you know, Nicole, I know that we always are wrestling with this. Because it seems like every time I take time off, there's something huge in the news that, I wish I'd been there to talk about it. But foolishly, we knew we had Thursday and Friday off. Not our choice. Company wanted us to take a four-day weekend. Not just us, but I mean, most of the shows on most of our stations. And because we're getting jammed up, because everybody's been working a lot, and everybody's going to have a billion hours of vacation, and they don't want everybody to take November and December off to eat up our vacation. So I understand it. But Wednesday, right as we were going off the air, there was a Jenny Durkin press conference. Did you watch any of that, or did you immediately go into four-day weekend mode?
No, I listened to the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness. I mean, I truly think that something's gone horribly wrong with Jenny Durkin, because she was like a robot. And somebody asked her, do you share any responsibility for the deaths of those two teenagers? And her response was, I mean, her face was just so flat and her voice was robotic and she didn't answer the question. And it was like, this has broken her in some way. And it was really scary to watch, because she accepted no responsibility when it is 100% undeniable that CHOP was her creation and CHOP is what led to those two teenagers being shot and killed.
Well, and that press conference was mostly about what she's going to give them all, like what she's going to give everybody after all of this happens, not the closing of CHOP. It wasn't about shutting it down or the people that died. It was about what we're going to give them now.
Yeah, and she's already pledged $100 million, essentially in ransom. You know, we'll give you the East Precinct, we'll give you six blocks of Capitol Hill, and okay, we'll give you $100 million if you give back our own property. I mean, it's so bizarre to watch how this unfolds. Okay, so that was the first thing in the news there, was the state patrol saying, yep, not a safe place, and we're going to not allow it anymore. Yeah, they should have done that day one, and somebody would still be alive today. That somebody being 24-year-old Summer Taylor. And then number two, they play this CBS report, and I'm so sick and tired of this. So the CBS reporter, coronavirus, COVID-19 is up in 41 states. And the number of people, the percentage testing positive is up in 39 states. And what's happening to deaths from coronavirus? Well, they're not going up as fast as the other numbers. They've basically plateaued at a much lower level than when they were a few weeks ago. And there are a lot of reasons for this. First of all, according to many scientists, it's losing its killing potency. I wish I knew who it was. Brilliant scientist was explaining that, you know, like so many things in nature, a virus wants to ultimately survive. And if it continues to kill every host, then the virus will die out. So one way that it can stay as an entity is by just losing its lethal potency. And then you have in New York, where the numbers are up, but the deaths are not going up. In New York, where, you know, the governor made choices that, you know, killed so many people in nursing homes there by mandating that coronavirus positive people be put in the nursing homes with the most vulnerable population. How Andrew Cuomo's gotten a complete free pass on that is, you know, sickening, but we know why. He's a Dem who might run in 2024. But in New York, herd immunity is starting to come to fruition. Because New York was one of the hardest hit states. A lot of people there had already been exposed. And between the fact that it seems to be losing its potency, and then beyond that, the people who are getting tested now that are leading to these skyrocketing numbers that, you know, CBS loves to tout, they are people who tend to be younger. And it just, it has a close to zero lethal rate if you're below 60 years old. And so they don't mention that the death rate is not going up correspondingly. And then you have the other, Harvard University. Harvard said they're not going to have any classes in classrooms all of next school year, but you're still going to pay your $50,000 tuition, and they're going to let kids still live on campus. Well, then you're not serious about this, because if putting them in a classroom together will kill them, but you'll put them in dorms together? Do you think that 18-year-olds away from home for the first time in their life, that they might party a little on Friday and Saturday nights? You know, it's like this story at the University of Washington. 100 kids in the Greek system have tested positive. Yeah, and they're probably all going to be fine. But that isn't added on to any of the coverage. They're probably all going to be fine. And the death rate is not included in the shock stats that are being pushed out there so that we can continue to be, you know, terrorized into compliancy. Don't forget, wear your mask. Okay. Quick timeout, great batch, awesome audio of the day. Lots more straight ahead as the Dory Monson Show continues. One-minute coronavirus update?
You know what? We played all the spots that needed to be played in that break, and so for the last...
I was waiting for that.
Last so 40 seconds.
I was talking on the phone with Nicole, for crying out loud.
Oh, I heard you. That's why I kept you potted down, yeah.
Thank you. You are a good and trustworthy friend and colleague, Sean. Oh, man. All right. Are you ready for awesome audio, Sean?
Am I ready? Are you ready for the show?
Am I? All right, let's count down our favorite sound bites of the day.
This is Dory Monson's awesome audio clips of the day.
Okay, number three, Harvard graduate Clara Janover. Last week, she posted on TikTok. Oh, I can't get enough of TikTok. It's like rather a veritable Algonquin roundtable. The meeting of the minds on TikTok. Anyway, but, you know, she got into Harvard, crying out loud. She graduated. And last week on TikTok, she talked about how she would like to stab people and then watch them bleed to death.
Number three.
The next person who has the sheer nerve, the sheer entitled caucasity to say all lives matter, I'm going to stab you. I'm going to stab you. And while you're struggling and bleeding out, show you my paper cut and say, my cut matters too.
Isn't that amusing? Well, she had an internship all set at the end of the summer with a prestigious Big Six accounting firm, Deloitte. And they said, yeah, we have an anti-violence policy. And we don't care if you went to Harvard. We don't care how progressive you are. That... we don't want an intern who talks about stabbing people to death. And that didn't sit well with poor Clara. She was so tough in that first video, but then she followed it up on TikTok. I guess the first one was her tick, And this one's her talk.
Trump supporters just took my job away from me. I've gotten death threats, rape threats, violent threats. It was okay. But now it doesn't make my future. My future is entirely compromised because Trump supporters have decided to come for my life. God, this sucks. You guys suck. I'm too strong for you. I'm too strong for any of you. All lives matter. Raises Trump supporters. It sucks, but it doesn't suck as much as systemic racism. And I'm not going to stop using my platform to advocate for it. And I'm sorry, Deloitte, that you can't see that. That you.
Yeah, Deloitte just didn't want you. But she was so tough in that first video. It's shocking. All right, at number two in our awesome audio, Marcellus Wiley. He's on Fox Sports. Had a 10-year NFL career. He was valedictorian of his class coming out of high school. Went to Columbia. Is in the Ivy League Hall of Fame. He was asked about a gesture that the NBA is planning when it restarts. And I thought he made a really solid point.
Number two.
Marcellus, I'm going to start with you.
Yeah.
Is this a good idea?
It's not a good idea.
And what they're asking, the NBA is going to paint Black Lives Matter on the court.
I do want to give the players credit for their flex to even get this to be more than just an idea, but something that's going to be in reality. I give the players that. But there's a problem with when you start to go down this road of the freedom of expression, freedom of speech, and how much social space is allowed for those who don't support in that same space. And that's where I wonder where this is going to go in terms of identity politics. We know what identity politics does. It divides and it polarizes. No matter how you want to look at it, that's just the effect of it, no matter how great the intentions are. And we all know the road to hell is paved with good intentions. So it's an interesting play right here. I don't know how many people really look into the mission statement of Black Lives Matter, but I did. And when you look into it, there's a couple things that jump out to me. And I'm a black man who's been black, and my life has mattered since 1974. And this organization was founded in 2013. I'm proud of you. But I've been fighting this fight for me and for others a lot longer. Two things. My family structure is so vital and important to me. Not only the one I grew up in, but the one I'm trying to create right now. Being a father and a husband, that's my mission in life right now. How do I reconcile that, what I just told you, with this mission statement that says, quote, we dismantle the patriarchal practice. We disrupt the Western prescribed nuclear family structure requirement. When I know statistics, when I know my reality, forget statistics. I knew this before I even went to Columbia and saw these same statistics that I'm going to read to you right now. That children from single parent homes versus two parent homes. The children from the single parent homes, this is in 1995, I was reading this. 5 times more likely to commit suicide. 6 times more likely to be in poverty. 9 times more likely to drop out of high school. 10 times more likely to abuse chemical substances. 14 times more likely to commit rape. 20 times more likely to end up in prison. And 32 times more likely to run away from home. I knew that. You know why I knew it? Because a lot of my friends didn't have family structures that were nuclear like mine. And they...
Marcellus Wiley saying that when the Black Lives Matter platform is about ending patriarchal families and the nuclear family structure, he says he's not down with that. Okay, that's it. I'm out of time. Tom and Curly are coming up next. God bless you in these crazy times. And we'll see you back here tomorrow. High noon. Take care.
Now that was unwholesome. That was not cultural.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. You're really a fantastic audience.